Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay with the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any questions or comments that you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you prefer to email me because you don't want to be on the radio, that's fine too. Just send me a note at bonkaye@aol.com. Before I introduce my special guest for tonight, I do want to make a few announcements. First of all, our healing weekend coming up at the end of September, September 28th and 29th, is filling up with women coming in from all over, from this country, from Canada, possibly from Australia and England. So it's going to be a really dynamic get-together this year. And this is my semi-annual healing weekend. This one's in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And, you know, it's a very affordable hotel rate. The conference is free. It's my gift to our women to help them in their process of healing. You just have to pay for a couple of meals and pay for transportation to get here, and also if you're staying at the hotel. But believe me, it'll be one of the most validating experiences that you could ever feel. Because when you join together with other women and you see that we all have the same story, maybe a different place and a different person, but it's the same story, you really feel renewed in your road to recovery. We'll have women there at all different phases. Some have been in gay husband recovery for a year, 2 years, 5 years, just starting out. And each woman really supports the other. So if you are interested, please let me know at bonkaye@aol.com. Also, please keep in mind that we have online support chat 3 times a week for our women in the United States and Canada, and now we have it for the women in the UK and Ireland, which includes Ireland, London, Wales. We have our Monday evening support chat for the UK, and Wednesday nights we have our support chat for adult children of gay fathers. So if you have interest in any of those online support groups, please let me know. Also, if you're not getting my monthly newsletter and you would like to be part of it, please let me know as well at bonkaye@aol.com. You know, the show is very important to many women who listen to this because this is your sense of support and getting, you know, the connection that you need to move ahead in your lives after you get this devastating news. And each week I try to bring on some wonderful support people to help me with this show to make you feel better about your lives. And tonight I have a very special friend of mine named Carmen Pulido right here in Philadelphia where I am at this moment. Carmen, how are you?
I'm fine, Bonnie. Thanks for inviting me back.
Well, actually, when I first talked to you, you were living in California, but I've had the luck of having you come back so I can actually meet you myself in person. But, you know, it's funny how lives intertwined with each other because I met you just quite accidentally through your son, who was one of my students. And, you know,
exactly.
He told me you had called me and we started chatting. You told me what you do. I told you what I do. And I said, wow. And then I got your book, The Woman's Success Guide. And I must say that this book so truly inspired me. And I do quote from you from time to time. Of course, I give you credit. But on my show, you know, I take excerpts out of your book because there's so many things in this Woman's Success Guide to help our women in our network, even though it wasn't designed for that. It was really designed for women who need to learn how to be successful in their own lives. And namely because, you know, we grow up in a society where we have certain expectations and, you know, a lot of times we go in the wrong direction, making mistakes because we're not thinking with, I always say, if you're not thinking with your head and you're thinking with your heart, you're doomed. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself and what led you to writing this wonderful success guide.
Okay. Well, I've always been interested in psychology since college. And I've studied a lot about it and probably read every self-help book there is, and just have always been curious about human behavior, why people do things. And then it got more personal in terms of why did this and that and the other thing happen in my own life. And being someone who read a lot of psychology, I was always trying to analyze why something did happen or didn't happen, maybe that I did want to happen. And I started writing about 20 years ago, and I started with a novel, and then I wrote a screenplay, and then I said I wanted to write something, something nonfiction that about something I'm interested in. And so since I've always been interested in psychology, read a lot about it, and had questions about the whys of my life, I decided to write a self-improvement book for women based on a lot of the things that I've read and the things that I've learned from my own life. And I actually have two sons, but I wrote this book as if I was writing a book for my daughter or my niece or a girl cousin or my younger sister. You know, what would I tell her based on my reading and my experience and, you know, about life, some do's and don'ts, what you can do to increase your chances of success. So that's kind of how it came about.
And I want to tell you something that throughout the years, and I've been around a lot of them, you know, I've read a lot of self-help types of books, and you know, it's really hard for me to find something that I can just totally without reservation say, boy, you need to read this. But I think this is such a great self-examination. I would like to go through a little bit of the book with you so that women can get an idea what this book is about, because, you know, we can talk about it and talk about it. But, you know, you start off and you tell a little bit about your own life. And you start off by saying, what's stopping you from succeeding? Do you have issues that are preventing you from having the job, relationship, or lifestyle you truly want? And you want to know why certain negative situations or people keep showing up in your life. Or if you're not quite sure what you're doing wrong and you don't know what you could do or should be doing right to improve your situation, then this book is for you. But I think a lot of this book really talks about relationships and, you know, being involved with people. And you say, personally, for most of my life, outwardly, things weren't all that bad. They just weren't great. I had a college degree, a series of decent-paying, semi-prestigious jobs, a nice house, car, clothes, relatively low financial debt, and several committed relationships. But internally, I was always depressed and feeling unfulfilled. Do you think that happens with a lot of women today?
I think so, because unless you really look at your life in a conscious way and make conscious decisions and choices that benefit you, a lot of times you just go from one thing to another and you're just kind of rambling through life, you know, just
without having any real distinct meaning, right? Like, in other words,
right,
you can get a job, you can work the job, you can go home, you can have television and cable. You can have a car, but you just feel a lack of fulfillment, right?
Exactly, exactly. And that is a good segue into the second success principle. But the first is to strive for your highest and best use. And that's kind of everybody has that. You know, we're all unique individuals. You know, some people are great at doing hair. Some people can design clothes. Some people are great at math, and, you know, they can teach people math and come up with formulas that solve problems and things like that. But one of the keys to success is you have to tap into what's really unique and different about you. You know, what are your best strengths? Because that's, you know, where you're going to make your most impact and how you're going to feel that you're going to feel successful, you know. because you're going to be happy, and, you know, feeling good about what you're doing is part of being successful. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of people I talk about in the book who are very successful. You know, the Michael Jacksons and Marilyn Monroe's, and we can just go on and on. But, you know, people who have financial success, but if you're not happy with yourself internally, you know, and fulfilling what you feel you need to do, you're really not successful.
You know, you talk in your book about parental influence and how that really does have its impact on relationships in your future. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, boy, yeah, that's a big one. That's a big one, and that ties into the first success principle, which is love yourself and others properly. And that's the chapter where I do talk about the influence of your parents, because let's face it, they have the most effect on you, you know, when you're growing up. Initially, the people that you're with are the people who aren't there, you know, and in my case, that, you know, was a very big deal, you know, that my father was in and out of my life. And when he was in, he was very exciting and charismatic, and then he was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that just created, you know, a lot of havoc with me, because, you know, I didn't have an everyday role model. I didn't have a father who was there, you know, to school or pick me up or, you know, interview, you know, my boyfriends when I was a teenager and things like that. So when you have, you know, parents that are missing or whatever, you don't really know. You learn the hard way. You learn the hard way about relationships and what it means to have somebody really support you and nurture you. You know.
Well, I think what you really
you don't
say that
know what that is.
Right, and that's
I'm
what
sorry?
You say in your book, which I think is really excellent, where you say physical abandonment and emotional abuse by male significant others is a negative pattern that runs in my family. I've been trying hard to overcome the negative pattern for most of my life. Here's how this negativity functions in my family. My mom and dad physically abandoned her. My mom's dad physically abandoned her in childhood, and she's raised by a stepdad who is emotionally abusive. Since my mom grew up not knowing what it looked or felt like to be loved and valued properly by her dad or stepdad, she repeats the pattern and marries a man, my father, who's incapable of being there for her or for me, and he abandons us via drugs and prison. Then my mom marries a steady Eddie who is physically there but who emotionally abuses both of us. Abandonment and emotional abuse is so damaging and hard to overcome because the message you get is you're not good enough to be loved or valued properly. And I just love how you put that. And then you say, and accepting the I'm not good enough message produces low self-esteem, people-pleasing tendencies, and love addiction. Simply put, love addiction is when you have an insatiable need to prove your worthiness by getting and keeping love by any means necessary. Been there, done that, lived to write this book, a novel and a screenplay about love addiction, appropriately called Love Line. But isn't that so true as far as, you know, I see this in our own women, because women who go into relationships that are destructive often come from really bad backgrounds. And we do repeat,
right.
You know, whatever's familiar to us. I always tell our women, you know, whatever you do is the legacy you leave your children. So if you stay in a marriage
right.
where there's a void when it comes to love and affection, you know, women a lot of
mm-hmm.
times say, yeah, but our children don't know. Of course your children know. And they're going to think that this is the norm, that people are supposed to
right.
live like this. And then they accept it in their relationships because, well, that's the way mom lived. I guess that's the way it's supposed to be. Do you find that to be so?
Exactly, exactly. And that's why at the end of this first chapter, I talk about non-loving behaviors that masquerade as love. Because, and that's piggybacking on what we just said, you know, when you don't have good role models or any role models, you know, or you have negative ones, you grow up thinking that this is the norm, you know?
Uh-huh.
So then you get in relationships and you accept physical abuse. You accept being emotionally abused and non-support. You know, you accept people lying or whatever, you know, the mother's boyfriend or stepdaddy or something like that, you know, was a womanizer. So, you know, and you include that in your repertoire of, oh, but I love him, you know. So I'm trying to say, look, certain behaviors are just not love. Physical abuse of any kind is not love. There's no reason for it.
Exactly.
Emotionally abusing someone, you know, somebody who berates you and whatnot, that's not love. You know, if he turns around tomorrow and says, I'm sorry, and yes, he pays the rent or whatever, it's not an equal equation. You know, you shouldn't be berated, and that equals, you know, somebody paying the rent. You're going to suffer internally, you know, if that's what you accept.
That's so true because, you know, I even had a woman write to me today, and she was discussing, you know, she had come to me a year ago, and I told her that she needs to leave, you know, her marriage and make a game
mm-hmm.
plan. You know, you don't have to walk out today, but, you know, there's a problem, you need to leave, especially when
right.
our women are married to gay men, so there's always going to be a problem. But she wrote
mm-hmm.
to me today that it's been a year since she spoke to me. You know, thanking me so much. But she did say, you know, I moved out of my big, beautiful house into a two-bedroom apartment, but I feel like it's a palace because you're not living
yes.
under that stress and that strain anymore, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. And when you stand up for yourself, there's just nothing like it, you know. I talk about showing up for yourself. You know,
mm-hmm.
in the book, and how you have to do that. That no matter what, you know, no matter who doesn't stand up for you and who doesn't show up for you, whether it's your husband or your children or whatever, you know, you just have to reach down and always show up for yourself, you know. And when you do that and you start building a track record of little successes, then that's how you grow your self-esteem. That's how you do it. My self-esteem was in the toilet at a certain point, you know, and there was no way I would, you know, I could have projected that, I don't know, 15 years later, you know, I'd be writing a book to help women. My self-esteem would be high enough to feel that, you know,
right,
I had something relevant success. To say, you know. So, but it happened. It happened incrementally. It didn't happen overnight. You know, it happened from writing this and writing that. And because that was another wonderful experience for me is that, you know, it's funny because you have to call yourself a writer before anybody else calls you that. So, but it's a very emancipating thing to just do something that you want to do and give your own self that label, you know? And then, you know, you write the book and then you put it out there and you see what happens. You
uh-huh.
see the response to it. And, you know, I'm just so happy that anybody responds positively to it. It's very emotional. It's very validating.
Well, sure, but you know what? It's such an important book, and it's so on track with everything that has to deal with our women. You have one part in here, and this is something I tell our women all the time, so I just like to read a little bit because it confirms what I tell them all the time. You write, if
okay.
you don't learn your lesson, you'll keep attracting the same challenge or the same problem. Most challenging aspects mm-hmm. of your life contain your biggest lessons. You're supposed to go through those challenges because there's something you need to learn, understand, pass on, renounce, let go of, affirm, or possibly teach others to overcome. Throughout most of my life, my challenges have been revolving around dealing with the negative influence and consequences of non-supportive love relationships. I kept having the same challenges because I kept replacing people instead of learning my lessons by fixing what was lacking in me. Once I began
right.
taking full responsibility for my choices and for my own happiness and direction, and I stopped expecting love to complete me, I learned the lesson I was supposed to learn. The lesson I was supposed to learn is I need to love and support myself first, no matter what or who doesn't support me, because I was born worthy of this love. I've always been trying to get from others. Once I finally... Okay, so what I tell women is this, Carmen. I would like for you to just concur with this. You know, I think that all of our women have been in very vulnerable situations that are part of our network. And they're coming out of bad, destructive marriages that were not meant to be. And, you know, these are loving, kind, giving, wonderful women, and I think that they are the first people who predators look for. Because predators, there's so many of them out there. I mean, and they're not lurking in corners. They start out as great guys. But these are guys who are either narcissists, sociopaths. I can go down a whole list. And they're looking for women who are trusting, caring, nurturing, and I hate to use this word, but I'll use it anyway, needy women who need to feel validated by having somebody who loves them, regardless of, you know, how bad or, you know, toxic the relationship is, because they're just coming out of a bad relationship and they don't feel worthy anyway. So then they perpetuate and they keep repeating the same pattern because they don't realize that the problem is them. That they have to change. Am I right?
You're right. You're right. And it's really true that, unfortunately, you know, there are a group of people out there that prey on nice people. You know, nice people who want to be supportive and just want to be loved. And, you know, unfortunately... You know, you have to do some things to qualify these people before you let them in your life, you know, because then, you know, when you get into another situation that's negative, then that's a hit on your self-esteem again, you know, then you got to rebuild again. So it's kind of like a delicate balance of being open to new relationships, but being somewhat a little bit too conservative, I would say, in terms of jumping in, definitely don't jump in.
Right, we're very quick in jumping in because after you've been rejected for so long, you know, the first person who comes along and says some nice, you know, sweet words to you, you know, all of a sudden he makes you feel as if you are validated and worthy, but you're not really feeling it yourself. So it's not going to work. I mean, this man can just turn on you in a second, and we have that happen to a lot of our women. You know, they just make bad mistakes after coming out of a mistake, out of desperation. And I tell them it's like any other kind of recovery. If you go to AA or you go to NA, they always tell you wait a year before you get into a new relationship. And I used to wonder why they were saying that. You know, when I was younger, I didn't understand it. But when you're going through a recovery period from something that's so addictive or something that's so strong that holds such control over your life, that if you get involved with somebody else, you're very likely to fall down and not have the strength to stay up. Because in any relationship, you go through so many different traumas. So I think the same thing with our women. I tell them gay husband recovery is a process, it's a road. I'm not saying that you shouldn't go out and have some fun or have some sex, but to get entangled in an emotional relationship when you're first coming out of something after 10, 20, 30 years, to me, is a bad move. Do you agree with that or no?
Oh, I certainly do. I certainly do. And it's really, that's the perfect time to really reevaluate what's going on with you. You know, what you really want, some things that are important to you. So set some goals for yourself, you know, projects that will move you from month to month to 6 months to the year out. You know, do something you've always wanted to do. Take a new course. You know, look for a new job. There's so many things in the community that you can get involved with that will take, you know, the place of a bad relationship, the time you spent in that, you know, you need to look for other outlets, things that make you happy. You have to really focus on things that you want that makes you happy to do and be involved in?
I mean, you talk a lot about visualization and how important mm-hmm. that is, you know, when you're coming into restarting your life again. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah. I mean, everything that you do, really, that's really important starts with the vision of it. You know, like when you ask a kid, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up, you know, and they say a nurse or a doctor. They have a visual. They have a visual of a doctor that they've seen on TV or something like that. I use the example of the book. You know, I came up with the idea, you know, of the book, and that's the thought of it is the first thing, you know, and then the more it becomes real in your mind, then you take action on that, you know, and you start reaching out to the world and letting them know about, you know, what it is you're trying to reach out for. You know, I say putting it out there in the universe, you know, for the universe to help you with the things that you want to bring into existence. But it starts with a thought in your head.
Uh-huh.
You know, and right now the thought in my head is Women's Success Club reality show.
Right, can you talk a little bit about that, Carmen?
Which doesn't exist yet. But
well, you're
it
in the
is
process.
A,
developing
I'm
it.
In the process of it. This is, it's an evolution of the book. For me, it's an evolution of the book. What I'm doing is I'm taking six, we'll call them regular or average women who don't have everything that they want at this particular moment in their lives. Let's say that that's what they all have in common. And I'm challenging them to take the book, Women's Success Guide, read the book, and do the success exercises. That's one thing we haven't mentioned so far, but in the book, after every chapter, there are success exercises. And I was really determined to create some exercises so that it would be a way for women to take the principles that are in the book and implement them in their daily lives. So I, you know, encourage them to just do various things in support of that particular principle. For instance, I don't want to get off of the show. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take six women who are interested in self-improvement, want to read the book, do the success exercises, and talk about their experience of it, what their challenges were, what were their revelations, what were their insights. Did they learn anything? When we get to the goal-setting chapter, what did they say their goals were? What are their sub-goals? And then with the exercises, you have to complete these goals. And then from one week to the next, the women are going to talk about what happened. You know,
and a lot of these exercises
that
a lot of the exercises you have in your book, you know, the Women's Success Guide, they're really therapeutic. Like one of them that I think is really great, it says make a list of five things you could do or say to each parent that would improve the relationship and or give you peace of mind, and complete the assignment even if your parents are deceased. But I think
right.
that's so good that you could be able, if you can't say it to them personally, write it down and don't be
mm-hmm.
embarrassed or ashamed. You know, people all have their feelings about parents, and may not be the
right.
You know, maybe you feel embarrassed to feel that way, but if it's true, if your mother or father
right.
hasn't been a real parent to you, I mean, I think that affects all of your life, right?
Right, and then this is a way where you can look at, you know, like when you write down five things or whatever that were, say, negative, maybe about your mom or your dad, and then you might look at that list and say, wow, I do that. And maybe a light bulb will go off. Wow, you know, that's something I consider a bad behavior, but I seem to have picked that up. And what I can choose to give that, you know. I can choose to just focus on the good things. And, you know, and a lot of, I'm hoping, you know, when you have these various revelations that it's like, you exhale. And now you can go on to something else because you've dealt with that.
And I think that's such a good way to look at it.
You know, that's the benefit of therapy. That is why therapy, talk therapy, is so valuable, because when somebody gets you to start talking about what's really bothering you, or say you have to make a decision, this is what I find is really so therapeutic a lot. I don't know which way I'm going to go. Like, I'm confused about whether I should go this way or that way with a particular situation. And when I talk about it out loud with, you know, and that doesn't have to be a therapist. It could be your girlfriend, you know, a good friend, somebody like you, Bonnie. You talk about it and you hear it. And I 9 times out of 10, I get the answer just from talking about it. The person on the other side is not even going to tell me, well, I think you should do this or that. But by the time I've laid it out for them, I've also laid it out for myself. And 9 times out of 10, I know which way I'm going to go after that. So it's just really good to really look at what's really going on with you, you know, opposed to denying things.
Carmen, do you think you give some tips to our women for building self-esteem?
Sure. I talked a little bit about it earlier. Little successes. To-do lists. I love a to-do list. And any type of things could be on there. You know, if you want to look for a new job, you know, you put that on there. If you need to call Uncle Bill because you haven't talked to him in 6 months, you put that on there. If you want to save money to buy something 2 months from now, you know, you put that on there. And then as you cross these things off of your list, you feel good. You know, that's one really small way, an incremental way on a daily basis that you build your self-esteem. And then you get bigger and bigger projects. Then a project may be, I'm going to go back to school, you know, and of course that's a big project. You know, you get to find out about the cost of it, the time, the classes, et cetera, et cetera. Make the time. But, you know, as you go through these steps and you do things that are really meaningful to you, that builds your self-esteem, you know. And then one of the success principles is discipline and control yourself. A lot of times the keys to your success are not doing certain things. Maybe certain things that are bad for you. You know they're bad for you. You know, they're repetitive. It's a repetitive thing that you're just used to doing now. You keep doing it. It's not benefiting you. It's not good for you. So in that case, you know, the best thing you can do for yourself is just don't do that thing, you know, and then reward yourself. If you go a week without doing it, hey, high five, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, we could use smoking. We could use don't call up, you know, an ex-boyfriend that you know is bad for you. Don't do it. Don't call it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So sometimes it's important about the things that you don't do and what you do do in order to be successful, I think.
You think that women are really socialized, you know, that they're really not that successful in life unless they have partners who love them?
What was that again, Bonnie?
Do you think that as women we're socialized that in order to feel like validated we need a man to make us feel complete, a man who we can take care of and make him happy?
Definitely, definitely.
You know, but our success is depending on somebody else.
Look everywhere.
Right? Exactly. I think it's a really bad message.
Don't turn on
getting.
The TV. Don't turn. If you turn on the TV, you're going to see that. You know, on every channel, and just you're bombarded with it, you know, and you just feel like
from the time we're little, we're taught about fairy tales, and how all the beautiful princesses, you know, always get the, you know, handsome princes, and they're the ones who are successful and happy, right? So we grow up in a fairy tale world telling us, you know, these fairy tales can come true to you. But, you know, there's a lot of people who I put in my classification of those ugly ducklings who were teenagers, who were awkward or gawky, who didn't fit into exactly that, you know, role and felt left out and like outsiders, you know, their whole time growing up. And, you know, I'm certainly one of them who acted out in a really negative way because I didn't feel like I could get the attention in a positive way. Which, to be honest with you, if I would have worked at it, I'm sure I could have. But, you know, I was screwed up myself as a kid and took a lot of these issues into adulthood, too, because I didn't have any kind of real role modeling. And that's what I tell women, you know, you have to be a role model to your children. And then when they keep telling me, well, my kids don't know anything's wrong. Is that true, Carmen? Kids don't know?
No, kids know. Kids know. Do. They really do. They feel that, you know, it is, they don't even have to see the outwardly, the fight, the verbal fights or anything like that. They, kids can feel tension in the household, you know. For instance, in my family with the stepfather, it was always, his thing was the Cold War. It was a Cold War. It was a silent Cold War. People would walk around the house, and you could feel the tension. There was no fighting, there was no screaming and hollering. Abuse was just like lack of feeling and emotion and anything, you know. And that was, I think it felt as bad as it was being hit, you know, especially as I was growing up. Because I didn't understand it. I felt like, oh, my God, you know, you need warmth. We all need nurturing. We all need
that. Affect you? Did that affect your relationship that you picked in your life? Because I know it affected mine. You know, I felt like a failure with my father, who was very, you know, abusive to me on an emotional and physical level. So for me, I was always looking for that love from some man. You know, feeling I needed to feel validated.
Exactly.
And I settled for a lot of wrong men when I was younger. I really did.
Oh, boy. Tell me about it. Tell me about it. Yeah, you just, you know, and then if they're not hitting you, if they're not, you know, physically abusive, then you can really take a lot of stuff. Because if your self-esteem is low, you know, and are not physically abusing you, then you may stay in that because you, well, I'm not getting hit. You know what I mean? I don't know, bruises or whatever, but the emotional bruises, you know, you're not realizing that the emotional bruises are just as bad.
I think a lot of these men are bullies, and you know, they see weakness in women, and they just kind of lurch in there. But I still feel that a woman needs to really do some, you write in your book about honesty, and I think that's a really important concept in any recovery, is to be honest with yourself about yourself. You know, you don't have to be on the defensive. If you're analyzing yourself, nobody else is doing it. You are. So what are you lying about? You're only telling yourself. It's not like you're telling other people. But you have to be honest with yourself and say, you know, something's wrong here, that the things that I'm doing are destructive. And I learned at an early age, maybe 19 or 20, you know, I was so screwed up as a kid. I was a high school dropout. I was out running the streets. I was out doing, I was promiscuous at that age. You know, I was really a mess. And I just remember thinking, you know, and I was always blaming my father was this, my mother was that. And then one day I became 19 and I said, you know what? I can't blame him anymore. I know what I'm doing is wrong, and if I continue to do it, I can only blame myself. But I think that...
But
how
did you have that insight at 19, Bonnie?
I was really doing bad stuff, Carmen, for a long time. So,
But for you to realize that even before you were 21, that was miraculous right there. You know how many people continue to repeat stuff in the 20s and 30s? Because when you were talking, I was going to ask you, what was your turning point? Do you remember one specific turning point that you just said, hey, I can't go on like this?
Well, I was growing up in a very different era back in the 1960s. And
right.
I was living out in California. My mother had sent me out there. My parents had split up, and I was really incorrigible. You know, I was getting in all kinds of trouble with boys, and, you know, because I had such low self-esteem that I looked towards
mm-hmm.
sex as a way to build up my sex self-esteem. And sex really didn't mean anything to me that much personally. You know, when you're
mm-hmm.
a teenager, how much can you really understand sex? To me, it was
right.
more the emotional need of feeling wanted by a man as opposed
mm-hmm.
to the actual sexual act. So if I could
yeah.
get a man to, you know, have sex with me, I felt like that was an accomplishment. And at that point of time, I really didn't care what his status was, what his marital status was. You know, I just
mm-hmm.
wanted to sleep with men, and, you know, that way they could make me feel like I was special, because
they
I didn't feel very
you.
Special at all. But, you know, it was funny because I can remember very specifically the moment when I did say to myself, you know, whenever I'd get involved with these guys, which was often, and I'd be talking about, you know, my father's this, my father's that, because most of them were older guys. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'd be complaining, you know, that my mother did this, my father did that. And then one day, I'll never forget, I can remember very vividly, if I closed my eyes, I was 19 years old. And before I said another word, I said to myself, you know, I have to stop this. Because if I want to screw up, I have to take the responsibility. My mother isn't here. My father isn't here. I'm here. So I
uh-huh.
know the difference between right and wrong. And if I choose to do wrong, that's my choice. But I can't be blaming them when I'm conscious of the fact that I'm doing it. You know,
right.
it's not like I'm not going to tell you I started doing everything right. I didn't, but I stopped blaming everything else. I was honest with myself. And
mm-hmm.
I think that was the first step to, you know, maybe feeling a little more mature, that I was
right.
able to take responsibility, you know, for my misdeeds. But, I mean, I screwed up plenty
mm-hmm.
after that, but at least I did it on my own. And I didn't blame anybody for it.
At least you didn't blame anybody else anymore for
no,
that.
I just screwed up on my own and took responsibility and said, okay, I'm a screw-up. But, you know, I think that when you come from such instability as I did come from, and I wasn't placing the blame anymore. It's just that I didn't even know what was a norm and what wasn't normal.
Right.
And that's when I tell women, you know, you're so much better if you're in a marriage where there's any kind of emotional abuse, physical abuse, you need to get out of it, because if you do have children, they're going to think this is the norm, that this is the acceptable behavior patterns in a relationship. And, you know, a lot
mm-hmm.
of times women write to me, and they're not sure about their husbands, because their husbands haven't become honest with them yet, or they're not being,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're not coming clean. And they say to me,
right.
well, I have no proof that he's gay. You know, I have these feelings, I just don't have the proof. So this is what I say to them, and you can say the same thing, because it doesn't matter what our situation is. But I say to women, if you have a daughter, you know, I first ask if they have a daughter. If they don't, I say, how about a sister? And usually they'll have one or the other. I say, and if your daughter or your sister came to you and said, I have wonderful news to you, for you. I'm marrying a man just like your, you know, like dad or like my brother-in-law. It's just
mm-hmm.
like him. What would you tell them to do? And if you're going to tell them, well, run as fast as you can, well, why is it okay for you to tell them but not yourself? Why are you staying in a relationship that you wouldn't want for somebody you loved, but you don't love yourself enough to get out of it? You know,
right.
I try to put it to them like that, and that's kind of like a wake-up call for a lot of women where they start seeing it differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like I say, sometimes we just get so lost in, you know, this running around in circles, or like Misty used to call it, the circle of crazy, that you just don't know where to begin, where it begins, where it stops. And when
right.
you're living with these guys who are emotionally abusive, you know, they're really good. In our group, I call it gay lighting. It's like gaslighting. But, you know, this is when our gay husbands are making us think that we're crazy. When you're catching them with all this gay porn on their computer and, you know, you catch them a million things and they tell you you're out of your mind. But, you know, you start losing
right.
faith and trust in who you are, so you're not making good decisions anymore. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, for women, you know, certainly are women, but there's a lot of women out there. And my biggest concern is that our women get out there and they're going to repeat the same pattern. They won't have maybe a gay husband, but they'll have somebody with other hang-ups or other problems.
Mm.
And I feel that, you know, there's some good men out there, Carmen, but you're out there. You know, there's not a lot of them, right?
Right.
I mean, they may look good, but it doesn't mean that they are good. And, you know, it's like the book I was talking to you about that I have, Man Readers, A Woman's Guide for Dysfunctional Men. I think after I wrote that book, I thought, maybe there's like 5 men left on this earth that you'd want to go out with. But, you know, between all the deviances, you know, such as sexual, emotional, physical,
yes.
guys into all kinds of weird stuff, you know, and into all
yes.
kinds of fetishes and, you know, control right. guys and sociopaths and narcissists, I figured out that 2
right.
out of every 3 men, I took statistically how many there were of all these different, you know, disorders, and it turned out
right.
that maybe 1 out of 3 is a good possibility that you could have some kind of normalcy with him. Maybe.
Oh,
but the rest, you can forget
goodness.
It. I know. It's not an easy thing to find a good man today.
No.
But I think that's because women
no.
are smarter. You know, women don't accept what they used to accept, like your mother did or my mother did. You know, my mother
mm-hmm.
lived one of those lives like you talked about. You know, she sacrificed her whole life just to get through.
Right.
And maybe she had a car, maybe we had a nice home, but she was never happy.
Mm-hmm.
And my father,
yes.
you know, he was totally crazy, so I guess maybe he was happy. But the point is that my mother never had the fulfillment that every woman, I believe, is entitled to. I think that's the first concept of Woman's Success Guide, is that you deserve more than what, you know, you deserve everything. You have to look at yourself as number one. Would you say that?
Right, right. And I know that I talk about that somewhere in the book, that, and this piggybacks on what you were saying about how, you know, when you tell the women to focus on what they're doing and the effect it's going to have on their children, and a lot of times, you know, you do so much for your children and you'll do things for your children and your man or your husband, you know, before thinking about what you would do for yourself. So one of the things that I do say in the book is be as good to yourself as you're willing to be for your children and your husband and your significant other. If you just really do that for yourself, a lot of times that's going to, you know, you're going to show up more for yourself than maybe you already are. You know what I'm saying? Because we can be so self-sacrificing. You know, and that's not really all that good for you personally to be completely self-sacrificing. You know, you have to fill
yourself up. I tell my women all the time, you have to set boundaries. You know, you have
mm-hmm.
to feel good enough about yourself to say no when you mean no.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean,
right.
these are hard lessons for me. I used to teach assertiveness training. And I used to laugh thinking, man, how could I be teaching this? You know, I have to be doing this stuff every day. I mean, it's a continual learning process for someone who's not assertive. I mean, I got so
right.
much better at it, but it took me so many years. And that's what I tell women. This, you know, just like you're saying, this isn't something that happens immediately. This is a process, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a process. It's
and it can be a long
a
one, correct?
A long one, you know, get certain things under your belt, and then you still have other stuff that you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lifelong thing. It's a lifelong thing of self-actualization, you know, being the best you that you can be, you know, putting yourself in the best place for you, you know, can take a while. It can take a while.
You know, one of the things that, you know, we talked about last week on our show, I had Donna Anderson from LoveParade.com, and Donna's
mm-hmm.
an expert on sociopaths. I mean, that's her thing, and she really is amazing about how she articulates all those concepts. But
mm.
I always tell women that, you know,
definitely
got to
read that book.
Oh, yeah. Well, she has a website. It's LoveParade.com. She has lots of free stuff on there. you know, all different kinds of videos that you can just watch while you're at her website at lovefraud.com, and a free newsletter that she sends out a couple times a week. So just sign up for it there. But, you know, one of the things we were talking about with women is that, you know, it's so easy when you're coming out of a vulnerable situation and you really want to, you know, be loved and you want somebody to love you, because I think that it's part of life. All of us require love. And we mistake these guys because they're so smart. It's not like they come to your door and take you out and beat you up on the first date. You know, I don't know too many men who are abusers who are on their first date going to say, oh, so nice to meet you, and smack you in the face. You know, they usually wait till at least the fifth or sixth date for that to happen. But these guys are clever, and they know how to, you know, get to you so you'll start caring for them. And then they'll accidentally, quote-unquote, hit you because you said something. Okay, so the first time maybe, you know, you believe it's an accident. But then by the seventh or eighth or tenth time, you realize this is a pattern, not an accident. But we always want to believe that we can change these men. We can fix them. And, you know, I always say my mantra is you can't fix a broken man, but he can break you. But do you feel the same way? Like, we spend so much time trying to fix something that's broken?
Exactly. Exactly. That is definitely a key to why we, you know, stay in the negative relationships. That's exactly why we think, you know, we can fix them if we're just understanding enough, if we just are accommodating enough, if we just don't set off the buttons, you know, if we help them. I became a rescuer. I was so much of a rescuer because when my father was away in prison, the roles got reversed. He was away for like years, like 10 years, 5 years one time and 10 years another time. And then the roles got reversed where I'm the one who has to send him things and keep him propped up and send him Christmas presents and go across the country to visit him. And it got me into this pattern of rescuing, you know, and it took me a long time, you know, and see, you know, that's what I was doing. We can't. That's what you first started saying, you know. We can't change people, or we shouldn't be about rescuing men. Why should we be about rescuing men?
And I think it's so true what you're saying about your father, because every child wants to believe that their parents love them. And when a parent doesn't love a child, the child looks at this whole thing as their failure, not their parents' failure. They think, what am I doing wrong? Why doesn't my daddy love me? I mean, that's how I was. You know, I kept questioning, why can't he love me? I mean, for him, it was always my weight. You know, from the time I was a child, he would say, I can't look at you. You know, I weighed 120 pounds then. You know, it wasn't like I was, you know, I am today. But, you know, and he would say, you look disgusting. And no man will ever want you, you know. And I always thought, well, why can't my daddy just love me for the good things I could do, or, you know, accomplishments that I make?
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, he said he was only trying to do this to help me. And I guess in his mind, because he came from such a family of emotional void and was just being repeated again. And I think that women need to be conscious of these patterns, because you will repeat them in your own life. You know, it's like when you're yelling at your kids. You know, when my kids were little, the first thing, you know, when I would get upset or angry and I'd yell at them, I'd hear my mother's words coming out of my mouth. And I thought, oh, my God, I swore I would never talk to my kids that way. Why are those words coming out of my mouth? Because it's learned behavior. You know, we repeat what we've learned unless we consciously work to, you know, change it, right?
We do, because, you know, I repeat it. You know, what my mother just put up with being unhappy, you know? So that, what's the lesson in that? When you see your mother and she puts up with being unhappy, what's the lesson? Put up with being unhappy, you know?
Exactly.
So you have to learn, that that's not acceptable. That's not a, you know, thing to do, is to put up with that. So, yeah, it's really important to just be conscious of these things.
And one thing about your book that I love, once again, Woman's Success Guide. And Carmen, what's the best way that women can get this book?
Okay, well, you can get this book from womenssuccessguide.com. If you just go Google and you put in Women's Success Guide, you don't even have to put in the .com. You just put in Women's Success Guide. It'll come up. You click on that, and you can buy the book there. It's also a Kindle book. And because, you know, Kindle, as a Kindle, it's only $8.99. And since Kindle was so discounted, I also discounted the hard copy. So the hard copy is $10 from the website. It's womenssuccessguide.com. That's how you can get the book. And about Women's Success Club, this eight-week reality show that I'm doing, I still need some more women who might be interested. So if you're in the Philadelphia area and you're interested in self-improvement, I would love it if you go to the website, read the first chapter, read the success principles, see if any of those make sense to you, if you can relate to that, and if you think it would be an interesting idea to be the star of your own reality show in Philadelphia this summer over July and August, then send me an email. My email address is chatwithcarmen@yahoo.com. I'm going to be doing this Women's Success Club reality show in Philadelphia. It's going to be filming in July and August of 2013, and I still need some more women. I would like it to be a diverse group of women. I already have.
What's the time commitment
women.
On it? What's the time commitment?
Commitment on
this?
It's 8 weeks. It's 2 hours once a week.
Mm-hmm.
2 hours.
So somebody lives in New Jersey or Delaware. They can come in, right?
Right. And it's in the evening. That's the other thing. We're taping in the evening from 6 to 8. So you don't have to, it doesn't have to interrupt your job. But if you can get to 7th and Chestnut Street, because we're going to be taping at Philly Cam Studios, if you can get yourself to 7th and Chestnut between 6 and 8 once a week in July and August, and you'd like to, you know, focus on your issues and improve your life, I invite you to send me an email, and I can tell you more about it.
And that's with chatwithcarmen@yahoo.com, or you can just write me a note at bonk@aol.com.
Yes.
Now, Carmen, here's
yes.
the whole thing. A lot of our women do not listen live. They'll listen throughout the week, and then, of course, every upcoming week as new people keep coming on. So what is the time limitation on this?
Well, I don't have all the people I need, so in two weeks from now, I probably will hopefully have the women. So we'll say 2 more weeks. I'm, you know, inviting women to call who would be interested in this.
Mm-hmm. So all right. We'll so you would say by the end of the first week of July.
Yes, or even I'd even go as far as the 15th.
Okay, so it's by mid-July 2013, you know, if you can have any if you have any interest in doing this at all, Carmen would love to hear from you, or you can write to me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll forward your information to Carmen. And where the show is, it's 7th and Chestnut. It's a very central area. It's very easy to get to from anywhere. It's right in Philadelphia Center City, and so if you're out in the counties, or if you're in Delaware or you're in New Jersey, you know, there's public transportation that'll bring you within a block of that. So
yes,
I think it'd be really exciting to have your own reality show. Carmen, if I were 20 years younger, I'd be on your reality show. Then again, I don't know how much you could do with me. You might say, oh, I failed.
No.
No,
well, I'm excited to see what will happen. You know, I really am excited to see what will happen and change and insights and all of that. So
but
thank you for inviting me on.
Well, thank you so much. You know, this book, like I say, I keep it by my side. I still have your autographed copy. I have five of them, but I do have your autographed copy, Go for the Gold, Carmen. And this book really inspires me. You know, when I'm feeling down or I'm feeling, you know, that I'm the only one going through something, I go read this book and I always feel much better.
Oh.
So for our women.
Oh, thank you, Bonnie.
Yeah, in fact, I'm going to talk to you because we're having our, you know, healing weekend in the end of September.
I heard about that.
Yeah, they're really dynamite.
I'm very excited about that. Now, what's the date of that again?
That's September 28th and 29th. And, you know, I'll get together with you before that and get some of your books and sell them there. Because I know that
right.
women really need them.
I'd like to take part in that. That sounds very good.
Well, maybe it will
you know?
Help you, Carmen. Maybe you won't get a gay husband
yeah.
after this. That would be good,
yeah.
right? we'll
yeah.
teach you all there is to know, so you don't make that mistake. You'll learn from
there
our experience.
Go.
Yeah, but that would be great.
There
so I'll be in
go.
Touch with you with that. But most importantly, if you want to be part of Carmen's really important reality show, you know, let us know, and we'll make sure to get you hooked up with Carmen. So, Carmen, thank
yes,
you so much for being my
you.
Guest. Yep, and I'll look forward to seeing you during the summer. Maybe before you
okay,
get started, we'll get
great.
Together for lunch. And everybody, I want to
That'd
let you know
fantastic.
That next week we have a very special guest back, our own in-house doctor in the house, Dr. Brian Hooper. And Dr. Hooper will be here talking to us about some really interesting revelations for our women. We have this wonderful psychotherapist who joins us every month. He's part of our network, Carmen, Dr. Brian Hooper.
Fantastic.
And he's the most Yeah, he's amazing. I mean, wonderful man. He's a gay therapist, but he's very much in favor of people being honest in relationships. He holds these men accountable for doing the mm-hmm. right thing, and he's very comforting to our women. So he'll be back with us next week. And Carmen,
okay.
we'll look forward to having you back, too, and I'll look forward to seeing you soon.
Okay,
so
thank you, Bonnie.
All right, thank
okay,
you. And to all
care.
Our listeners, have a wonderful week, and love to all of you. Good night.
Good night.